Hey, drama listeners, Dylan here. Before we jump into this episode with Anna Gasteyer, who, I mean, you obviously all know, she's an SNL legend. You just saw her pop up in a million sketches during the SNL 50 celebration weekend. Connor and I have been obsessed with her for so long. And obviously, she was one of the first women to ever play Elphaba. But the career that she has had since then, appearing on all of the funniest TV shows, making movies, she was literally in the Mean Girls movie. Obviously, she holds a special place in my heart, being in Grease Live. It's just crazy that we got the chance to chat with her. She's in the middle of doing press for Once Upon a Mattress, which has just released its absolutely stunning cast album. You all need to check it out. The digital version is obviously available, but be old school and get the physical recording, which comes out the beginning of May. So check that out. And of course, listen to our episode with Anna. She is funny. She's one of the best storytellers we've ever had in our presence. And getting guests like this just continues to really validate that Connor and I feel like we're doing something special here on Drama. And we're so grateful for all the people who support us by listening, downloading, sharing, and even those who contribute a little bit to our Patreon, which is Drama Plus. We're going to mention this later on in the episode, but there's a fresh bonus episode. We do two of those a month if you subscribe. And we recorded one right after recording with Anna because during the episode, the Outer Critics Circle nominations broke, and Connor and I wanted to like break them down, as awards gays. So that is going to be already released by the time that you hear this episode, as well as a huge backlog of bonus episodes where we talk about awards, theater, pop culture, love, life. You know the shtick. It's drama. We love you so much. Be sure to check all that out in the notes below on this episode. And if you're feeling generous, why don't you give us a rating, maybe even a review? Thank you to everyone who continues to support us. All right, enough of me already. Let's get on with the show.
Press play. Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to taste in
the shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
The option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, there is one thing on my mind that I have been just salivating over for two full days since the news broke.
I know what you're going to say.
Do you wait? Do you want to take a guess? I'll be gagged if you know.
Is it about the bullhorn and Nicole
Oh,
Scherzinger and all that?
actually, no. But that should
Okay.
that's the other thing that's been on my mind. Wait, how iconic is that?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
So good. But no, I was going to say, I'm obsessed with this new musical in development. Carly Rae Jepsen writing the music, Lena Dunham writing the
Yes.
book, 10 Things I Hate About You. I mean, it's going to
Amazing.
be so good.
I know at some point I'm like,
Oh.
oh, enough with the adaptations, enough with the adaptations. But I'm like, okay, wait, give it to me. Give it
No,
to me,
they're going to
Rachel.
nail the tone. They're yeah, send
Yeah.
it to me, Rachel. They're going to nail the tone. I mean, as a Carly Rae Jepsen stan, and as someone who would follow Lena Dunham's works to the depths of the world,
And have,
and
yes.
him, I think they're just going to nail it.
I know.
Like,
Now
totally.
I've never seen 10 Things I Hate About You, but I'm a Heath Ledger
It's
super fan, so I'll need to add that to my
so good. It's very naughty.
well, sign me up.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, you're going to love it. Wait, I want to watch it with you.
Okay, maybe I'll hold. Maybe I'll hold.
Let's wait.
Okay.
But no, the bullhorn is
So
beyond,
good. So
beyond.
good.
Loving seeing the parodies of it. And moments before we started recording, today's guest did drop their
I
own.
know.
It's just perfect timing. Oh my God.
I know. And it's perfect for her because, she's known as a parody queen, a sketch goddess, a mother, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to bring her in. I'm so excited about today's guest. I'm honored.
Freaking out.
Our guest today is the definition of an icon. She most recently starred on Broadway in the revival of Once Upon a Mattress as the Queen, in which her performance can be heard on the newly released cast album. Our guest is perhaps best known for her 6-year stint on Saturday Night Live, as well as being one of the very first women to play Elphaba in Wicked, playing the role in Chicago and New York. She appeared on Broadway in the Rocky Horror Show, The Royal Family, and Three Penny Opera, as well as in productions of Funny Girl, Passion, Annie at the Hollywood Bowl, A New Brain at New York City Center Encores, and originated the role of Deborah in David Lindsay Abaire's Kimberly Akimbo at MTC. On screen, you'll recognize her as the lead of American Auto on NBC. The live musical productions, which are very important to me, of A Christmas Story and Grease, Mean Girls, Wine Country, Happiest Season, The Goldbergs, Lady Dynamite, The Good Wife, Suburgatory, Girls, The Masked Singer, and so much more. She honed her comedy skills with the Groundlings, has two albums, including the iconic holiday release Sugar and Booze, and is truly one of the greatest stars we have. We are so gagged to welcome to drama Anna Gasteyer.
Iconic. I'm so honored. I'm so honored, Gen Z. Or Gen Z.
We are such millennials, it hurts.
I love using emojis, so you know I'm a millennial.
Okay, got it.
I know.
Yeah,
do
you're
you,
right.
Do you use emojis?
Yeah, of course. And I use like the same three. That's really the move of the millennial, because my mom even does that, and she's, you know, a boomer. So it's like she uses the universal one that's like one giant eye and everybody going like, ah, you know, that one.
Oh yeah.
I don't. She uses it for anything at all, like getting ready for bed, you know, anything. It's her one move. And my dad has this weird like cow with stars in it that I think was a typo. It's the only one he's ever used. And it comes at the strangest time. So I'm not sure he knows he's sending it, you know?
Fair. What are your three?
I use the one, which I don't even know what technically the emotions are, but Dratch and I send it to each other all the time about things, which is, it's the one I'm like,
Yeah, kind of like a cringe smile.
It's a little cheese it, like a little like, I don't know. That's what I'm thinking in my head. Uh-oh. That's generally how I'm approaching things in life. I use that one way, way, way too much. I use the dancing lady all the time. Like, we're going to have a party, obviously.
In the red dress.
Classic.
Yeah, the red dress. Yeah. I use that red dress. And I also use the disco dude.
Yeah.
And I mean, that pretty much sums up my personality, being tentative and overbearing.
Oh my God. Well, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, but we're such big fans and we're so honored to have you on today. We saw you in Once Upon a Mattress.
Thank you.
Last fall. And we were dying to have you on. Yay. So I'm so glad we're having you on now, as the album has dropped.
Album has dropped. She's dropped.
And it sounds amazing.
Yeah, they did a tremendous job. Adam Gettle was really involved in the production of it. And it was such a, you know, limited engagements are so, I can never really tell. It's like, were they so wonderful because they were limited and everybody brings their whole heart and self to it, because there was anti-drama. It was like everybody was got along so well. It was so fun. It was so fast. And in many ways, you say yes because you know it's going to be. I mean, I said yes instantly. And I started because that cast was so stacked,
yeah,
as the kids say. And like even the changes, the City Center changes, like Daniel Breaker is a friend of mine. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be in a play with Daniel, you know? And again, it was just light. It's light and funny. And Brooks was in it. I mean, it was crazy. The cast was so talented. So, and then because it was moving from encores, it was like a 3-day rehearsal period, which is a mixed blessing. I mean, on the one hand, you're like, oh, thank God, I'm not going to like, you know, have to miss my entire summer vacation. But on the other hand, like you're kind of rehearsing all the way through the, you know, first month of the show in some respects, even though you're open and frozen. It is, I mean, for me, with that, if you know the show, that monologue is long and scary.
Yeah.
And even though it's comedic, it's like, it's the way we it was staged is very encore presentational moment where you're just kind of you and the audience and the monologue. So that definitely took a long time to like get in my bones, even for a light musical comedy, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. So yeah, were you one of the only new additions after the encores run?
I replaced Harriet Harris. Daniel Breaker came in for the Jester, and Will Chase came in for Prince Harry.
Oh, right.
We love Will. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was it. So, and then Sutton, Michael, Nikki, Renee Daniels were all in the encores.
Yeah.
It was an incredible cast.
And David Patrick Kelly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The best. The best. Yeah. I thought the costumes were gorgeous.
Everything.
I mean, it was just the most delightful time. And it was at the right time, too.
It was at the right time. I mean, I honestly wish we were still running, because of course, Tony eligibility is such a bummer for shows that are in the fall. And I do feel like it had such a wholesome, you know, there's, and I say this with great respect, there's always like the effort to reinvent a classic. But what was really kind of, because it was born of the Encores tradition, there wasn't a whole lot of reinvention. It was a very wholesome, delightful retelling, and nobody could be more appropriate for Princess Winifred than Sutton Foster. And I just think it was really well cast. Like everybody suited what they were doing. I usually say no to roles like to Agravain, because my coming off of Saturday Night Live, it was so hard to convince anyone that I actually could sing. So I had to spend, you know, it was like the ramp up to Wicked was not easy. And, you know, it's it's a very like afterthoughty kind of thing. Like, who's the character actress who can kind of carry a tune? I just try to avoid that in general because you get so sort of cornered, but it was such a happy medium. I really enjoy. I've reached a place in my career where I'm like, whatever. If people haven't figured out that I sing by now, like that's their problem. And I love it and it's fun and you don't have to like carry the whole show when you're that part. On the other hand, I will say, like having done the Elphaba parts and even Threepenny was very vocal. And when I tour with my album, I tour every Christmas, my Christmas album. And that's whatever, a night of you carry the whole thing. That's 14 straight songs, and it's usually 3 weeks in a row, and it's a little bit brutal. So I was like, I just want an easy lift. Like it's legit. I don't have to belt, all that stuff. But then I forgot that the character screams the entire time. And it's actually harder to scream than belt all night. So I ended up being having to be pretty vocally careful after all was said and done.
Oh my God, I'm sure.
Did you find yourself pulling anything out of your bag of tricks from your Elphaba days?
I literally just went back to my voice teacher. I mean, I work with Liz Kaplan, who's kept a lot of Elphabas healthy
Oh
over the
yeah.
years, and just, we had a very specific, literally, like, well, I also think because I do belt that I was able to belt a lot of my screaming, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
But it's a hollery role. All those quiets and you want to be able to give it like real balls, which is fun because that's what's funny about a yelly lady.
Oh yeah.
In theory, or at least I think it's funny, but so we did a lot. I warmed up and cooled down every night, just like I was doing a old-timey, Wicked or whatever.
Yeah. Gosh, you and Michael Urie were so great together too. Oh, what a pair.
I love him. He was so fun. Yeah, he's such a generous actor, and he just got nominated for an Outer Critics. I just got the text. Yeah,
Oh my God.
he's extraordinary, and
Oh.
he's fun, and he's generous, and he's. If I could do one, I mean, I love the way my career has gone and I feel really lucky. And I suppose that everybody ends up where they're supposed to. But I will say, if I could go back and get trained, every actor I've ever met who was trained at Juilliard is this weird combination of unbelievable and technically perfect and fun. Like somehow in the Juilliard training, it seems like at least the people I know, Daniel Breaker and Michael in our show, Vella Lavelle was the lead in my, Christmas movie that I did with Dratchen. There's just an ability to let go and enjoy the process, which I really admire because their technique is so strong. They're very good, funny actors who come out.
For sure. Oh,
Yeah.
that's so interesting. I'm sure Michael rubbed off on you a little bit with his energy and everything. He's such a sweetie.
Yeah, I mean Sutton too. Like it was just a ball of fun bunch. I mean, we would go. I had this. The Hudson's really small, so there's this one like. Off stage, I think it was the Jack Parr show, literally back in, it's the oldest theater on Broadway. And so it's like the star dressing room where like Elvis, literally, like when he performed, and whatever, Carol Burnett, and all these people who had over the years performed at the Hudson. And so it was right off the stage. And I had this massive, we all three had star dressing rooms, me and Michael and Sutton. And there too were upstairs, which is where Dan Radcliffe and Lindsay had been for,
Barely.
Merrily and Graf Soss had been in mine. So, and they were like, there's three, which one do you want? And Michael automatically was like, you have this big gown. Like, do you really want to be running up and down these like, crickety theater stairs all night long? It's easier if you just want the one right off stage. So they all had, and it was so fun because the overture would start every night and it would be Michael, a ton of the male ensemble, Brooks, and we would sort of assemble. I guess it was during Many Moons. Yeah, it was the overture and then into Many Moons. And we would all hang out in my dressing room and just do bits and like get in the mood basically for the show. We ultimately first started doing it off stage and then we got shushed. And so then we moved into our, yeah.
Oh, I hate getting shushed. It's one of my pet peeves.
We got shushed deservedly. We were shushed all the time. We received a written note from our poor long-suffering conductor. And Britt DeChateau, she was like, you guys are so loud. And she literally was like, you guys, this is the only overture right now playing on Broadway. Can we hear it? I would love to hear it with your stupid loud bits. Didn't write that, but it made me laugh. I mean, it was so deserved. Just a bunch of jerks making, noise and ignoring the beautiful. It was spectacular. I love the music.
Oh yes. And I'm sure that like so many people came to see the show who had done it because it's one of the most
It's one of those shows.
produced. Yeah.
It's the best privilege because everybody has skin in the game. The only other show that's like that is Grease. because everybody's done Grease in high school and everyone's done Once Upon a Mattress at camp or middle school. And the reason being, there are a million parts.
So true.
So there's like nine roles. So like drama teachers are like, there's something for everybody. You know, even in Mattress, there's like a non-singer because the king can score, but like non-verbally, which is kind of amazing. And so, yeah. So you every night, you all so many of my friends, I mean, Dratch, Amy Poehler played Winifred in high school. Like everybody's like, oh yeah, everybody had like a personal relationship to the material, you know?
Did you?
No, we didn't do it. My school only did one musical a year, and you had to be a senior to get a good part. So we did The Bells Are Ringing, which we called The Bells Are Farting, which doesn't even make sense, by the way. Like this, it doesn't even rhyme. Like it's so lazy. And but th that was freshman year. Was we did Bells Are Farting. We did Pajama Game, which is pretty fun ensemble actually. And then the tragedy of my high school was that we were supposed to do, because I was like a soprano, like, you know, a trained soprano, like that was like I got into college for like an opera program, because back then they
Ooh.
didn't even have really musical theater at Northwestern where I
So,
went.
Juilliard almost happened for you.
Well, my parents wouldn't let me go to conservatory, but also it would have been a disaster because I dropped out of music school after a year because I went to Northwestern and found the comedy people. Like I said, there was no music. Also, I will say, like, there were musical theater people, but there was no musical theater program. They were just theater majors.
I see.
And in the Midwest, you guys know, it's hardcore. Like I grew up in like DC, like a Quaker school. I didn't know anybody who, like, my mom thought jazz and tap were tacky. So like I wouldn't, and you know, it was like you had to be a soprano. She thought belting was tacky. They loved Broadway, which is weird, but if you belted at all, she was like, that's tacky, don't do that, you're gonna blow your voice out. She didn't like that. So I didn't think that you could do it. And I got to Northwestern and like, if you were a musical theater person, A, you'd been doing jazz and tap since you were out of the womb, and Irish step, which a lot of kids in the Midwest do. And B, you'd worked at Six Flags every summer, and you'd had like, or you'd worked like Equity dinner theater. Like there was so much Equity summer stock and dinner theater in the Midwest. So people had their Equity cards. They were like way ahead. I remember there's this show at Northwestern called The WAMU Show, which is like a big variety. I think now they write it as a full scripted show, but it used to be sort of like a variety review. But it's huge. I mean, the budget is massive and people come back every year and it sells out really early. And all the sort of like aspiring music theater people do the WAMU show. Like, you know, Brian D'Arcy James, like anyone from Northwestern, you're like, hey, did you do WAMU? Yeah, you do WAMU. So I did WAMU my freshman year because I could sing and I auditioned and I got in as a singer. And I was the weirdest fit. Like I was terrified. This is where I met all these men. And there was this girl, Mary Teresa Caprillis, and she dropped out of school because she got cast at Disney Tokyo, which had just opened. Like it was a serious musical theater like component. So my point being that I was so like, oh, I am way out of my league. So I just bailed completely and started doing improv comedy. I found the improv people because, you know, improv was born in Chicago. And then I dropped out of music school and I like walked away completely from singing. And I really didn't think about it professionally again. I did it, you know, comedically. I used it as like a tool, but I didn't think about it professionally again until I was on SNL and Mark Shaiman and Scott Winton called me in to just do a like to be in the ensemble for to do some of the early Jackie Hoffman lines in the first script of the Hairspray musical. It was like the first workshop. And then I loved it, you know, because I read music and I could do all of those things, but I hadn't quite like found my way. And then I did Rocky Horror, my final season of SNL summer. I did like the vagina monologue. I did like the things that people do in theater, like when they're available for 3 weeks. But then SNL's like, you know, like college, like it's during the school year and then you had the summers off. And so I got cast in Rocky Horror. And then when I did that, I was like, I love this. I love this. I love the people. I love the routine. I love the, you know, all of it. And that was the moment at which I was sort of shaping my like idea of what was coming next. And so I really started focusing very diligently at that point on Broadway. And so I was in the final workshop, believe it or not, for Wicked because I'd done the vagina monologues and Joe Mantello had directed. And he was like, I think they thought I was, they were like, I think she sings, you know, whatever. But it was so above and beyond like what I could even imagine doing. Also, I wasn't technically available because I was still on SNL and they
Okay.
were going to San Francisco.
Right.
But when I left SNL, I was like, I want to do theater. I want to do theater. And so that's when I did. I got cast in Kimberly Akimbo.
Yes.
That was my first job, as you mentioned.
Aunt Deb.
Aunt Deborah. Yeah. At
That's right.
MTC at the in the when I did the I did his final reading and then I did the show. And then I just started really focusing, like in a really diligent way.
Wait, so okay, you're charting this journey of
Weird journey. And my journey is so
stepping
weird.
into your, I love it. Well, I feel like it, like you mentioned earlier, like the path, it's the one you're meant to go on for
Yeah.
sure. And I'm curious, so when you got cast in Rocky Horror that
Yeah.
summer, were you already thinking like, okay, maybe it's time to move on from SNL?
Yeah.
Like, did you know that was going to be your last season coming up?
I had a good sense of it.
Good sense. Okay.
I've never said that to anybody but you, but yeah, I had been there, you know, it was between my fifth and sixth seasons. At that time, people really did like five was like the contract, and I was sort of an extra year out of my season, you know. And I wanted to do more things. I wanted to have a family. I wanted to like I just was ready to do other things. You know, sometimes I have regret that I left when I did just because it's fun, but it's very all, I mean, Broadway is all consuming too. Everything's all consuming. Like you
Yeah.
just, you know, everything takes all of your time. So, but I kind of felt like I'd given it the best that I could give. Like I wrote my material, I was engaged, I was present until the very end, and I really wanted to start a family. And so that was probably more the calculus, but I also I was looking, and the way that I look at this in the retrospect, I was looking to refine, and theater is about refinement all the time. So with SNL, you're always like pulling it off, and you're always coming up with it, which I love doing. Like, and now I'm so lucky because I feel like my job involves both, and I love doing theater that has that's actually Mattress was very fulfilling this way because it allowed for a little bit of spontaneity, because you can also kind of overcorrect in theater and get like really OCD and like perfectionist, you know, when you get in the grind. But yeah, I was just looking to, I wanted to get back into study. I wanted to get back into the routine. I wanted to, like, you know, the good thing about the human voice and the odd thing about the trajectory is like it is really true what my mom was saying. Your voice hits a really starts to hit its stride at like 35. I can hit notes now that I couldn't hit in my 30s. So it's weird how you like it is a muscle and like a usage, and I don't really know. Different people sing different ways at different times in their lives, right?
Sure.
Yeah. But I know my instrument obviously by now so much better. I don't think there's any way to do that without 8 shows a week. I just don't. I think trying to stay healthy in whatever capacity, you know, Queen Agravain screaming or Wicked or you know, Threepenny, like you have to let you have to really know what you're dealing with, your own body.
Do you feel like you're in back in the theater world now? Like that you want
Yeah.
to keep doing some more, maybe some original stuff? Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I love it. It's absolutely my there's a humility to theater people. That's a funny thing to say because they're such jackasses, but there, you know, there's a humility. They're the hardest working and the lowest paid across all of the arts industry. I mean, of the professional, you know, by comparison to television or film or, you know, things like that, the other world, the degree to which they can be a massive star and still take the subway and still bring their lunch in a bag is, I think, very, I don't know. I just relate to it. I like living in New York.
Yeah.
I love going to the theater. I love the pure grind of the job is so deeply admirable to me. And again, like people roll their eyes. It's so hard. It's so hard. And anything you go see, or just like, even if it's a stinker or whatever, like the amount of effort and hard work that's going in, I just have the deepest admiration for. And the sort of sacrifice required of families, of individual, you know, of your schedule, of one day, like a consistent loss of a day of a week. I just have great admiration. And then as a, you know, human living in New York, I love that routine. I love taking the subway. I love Hell's Kitchen. I love running into people. I love going to Green Symphony, you know, during rehearsal.
Yes.
I have like a real soft spot just for like, it's a type, you know, it's a personality type. And it's not for everybody. But also, I'm going to say something corny.
Lay it on me.
You know, I'm not a very religious person. I'm not religious at all. But I do think if you're born with the gift of a voice, of whatever a gift is, you know, there is no, for me personally, like there are very few places in my life that I can just it's such a weird thing to have in common with another person, musicianship. And anyway, like when I go to like the benefits and I like see Annaleigh Ashford, or I see Kelly O'Hara, or I see a Sutton, and we all understand what the other people are capable of doing. And for me, especially because I'm such a like comic and people don't really take me seriously, but to have like, Kelly just say like, "Oh my God, I don't know how you belted the way that you did in that number," blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just, it's so validating, and it's such a weird, cool tribe to be a part of. And I'm not saying that obviously there's subtleties. I can't do what Shoshana Bean does. I can't do what Kelly does. But, there is this like true respect and amongst the community. And, it's not always driven by like outside influences. Like, I mean, I know people say like, "Oh, it's so unfair. TV stars are on Broadway now," but I think it really, you have to be able to do it. Like, there's kind of, it's non-negotiable. It's like the Olympics. Like, you can't just like be a TikTok star who's a pretty good skateboarder and go to the Olympics, like you actually have to have the craft, So, even when these TikTok kids come in, they're good. They're really good. And they're usually aspiring to what we're doing anyway. There's a great respect for the work,
Absolutely. Well, I was thinking about how when you left SNL and you joined Wicked, you originated the Chicago production, right? That feels pretty like, what was the response like that you were getting? Like, oh my gosh, this SNL star is going to go play this role.
So I was speaking to this earlier before we came on camera, but so what's really wild about how, and I kind of wish I could go back and fix this, because I did, I was telling you, I was in that final for the workshop, and then they did the show. And then, so Stephanie J. Block was the out of town understudy, or she might have been in a reading. Anyway, there was sort of a sequence of early standbys and understudies. It was Stephanie J. Block, Eden Espinosa, Shoshana. And I was in for the first round of auditions when Adina was leaving. So it was me and those girls. And they gave it to Shoshana. She was the standby, as it should happen. Then Stephanie got the national. And this is why I always tell actors too, give it your best and give it your all, because even if you don't get it in the moment, something's coming. If you earn equity with a casting director who's put their neck on the line for you, and you do your really hard work, it often pays off. Maybe not in a way that you saw coming. So, whatever, 4 months later, national tour is going gangbusters. They're in their second season on Broadway. And Bernie Telsey called me at home, and he was like, "Listen, we're going to originate a company in Chicago. There's never been a sit down of any Broadway production. It's going to be a huge deal. There's going to be, money, Broadway money involved, above Broadway money, because it's on the road. And it's a great opportunity. Joe's directing," because it was this, third company. So it wasn't like, when you're all the way down and you're just dealing with like the associates, and not that they're bad, but Joe was like in the room really. And since it's an original production, it had an original cast. You're starting with that cast. There's a prospect, so for relationships. And they used all these great Chicago actors for, Morrible,
Yeah, Rhondi
and
Reed, right?
Rondi Reed was Morrible, and Heidi Kettering was Nessa Rose, and these sort of like institutions in Chicago. And I knew it was a game changer. To answer your question, I knew if I did the role, the Broadway community would see me very differently, because I had been doing like every benefit that anyone could ask. I did like Funny Girl at the CLO. Like, I was like, whoring myself out to any like regional that would ask, but still you could just feel it. And it was really a time where people were like, "Oh, can she really do it though?" There was just this like eternal skepticism, which I don't feel like people have quite as much these days. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Right. I was thinking that because it is so much more common now for star casting, you know?
Yeah, like when Taron Killam went in and did Hamilton and stuff, it wasn't like,
No, people are more, they were really sus back then. And so I had to like sort of earn my stripes, and I did. And so, but what is annoying is that it was pre-internet, really, because it was 2005. And then I came to Broadway. No, it was 2000. I always do this by my daughter's birthday. It was the first preview. She was three on my first preview in Chicago. So she is turning 23. So 20 years ago, anyway.
2005 then, yeah.
2005. And then I would came to Broadway. So I came back to Broadway, did Threepenny, and then I went to Wicked after that. So I did Broadway right after that. So at that time, the second any bootleg would go up, there was a cease and desist so fast. The internet shut. They were all Broadway producers wanted to protect the IP. Now it was so weird, like going back, whatever, 14 years since it was 14 years since my last was since Broadway show number 4 and 5 or whatever. And I was just stunned by the internet relationship to theater.
Yeah,
I
right.
mean, obviously we're partaking in it right now, but what was it was so like now, and again, I guess two people are young, and why would you know that I did Wicked, you know? But to me, I'm like, yeah, I did Wicked, whatever. I was very early Elphaba. And it's funny because people are still discovering it like all the time, like on TikTok or whatever. People, I didn't realize she sang, you know. And again, like I sang constantly on Saturday Night Live in a funny way. Like even doing the 50th this year, I got to be in a
Yeah.
million things, but it's because I sing. They were just like, oh,
Right.
we'll get on it. Just so we'll get on it. Like if you have a trick, they're going to call you to use it, you know?
You were so featured. Oh my gosh, with Sabrina
It was
Carpenter
totally
and
accidental. Like it was just like a lot of things that they're like, oh yeah, you know, whatever. Like Kristen's doing, you know, Lawrence Welk, will you sing? So it is it's funny. People just still don't know. And so every blue moon, like whatever, someone will post something from Wicked. And it's always shocking to me. People have they're like, I literally had no idea. I had no idea. Anyway, so it's kind of wild.
I thought it suited your voice so well, though. I mean, there's stuff out there, and you sounded amazing.
So healthy and strong.
Oh, thank you. Well, it was
Yeah.
very early and it was very hard because I think I've gone. I mean, we went back, we all went back for the 20th, I guess it was. And it was such an amazing experience. I have to, were you guys there?
Connor
I was
was there.
there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Oh my God.
it was like, you know, because first, you know, it's like high school reunions almost where you're like, do I want to go? Like, do I want to deal with it? Like, do I have to look, you know, feel whatever? Am I going to feel fat? Like, all the things.
Yeah.
And I called up Kate Reinders, who's in Utah because she was shooting that High School Musical show there. And I was
Yeah.
like, you have to come to the, you have to come, you have to come with me. And she, you know, and then she was like, fine, I'll come. And we sat down and that whole front section was Elphabas and Glindas. Again, like to my point about the community, like, how many weirdos on planet Earth can sing this score who really understand how flipping hard it is? I mean, the smoke, the fog, the weight of the suitcase, the weight of the broom, the weight of the book bag, like that the grimoire is like a phone book. It's so
Yeah.
ridiculously heavy. So, you know, like these things and that it opened and we just burst into tears because it is, you just look at yourself and you're like, I can't believe my younger self did this. Like, it's really so hard. But also, the show is fully like 9 minutes faster.
It is.
And meanwhile, I'm like, we were sustaining these notes for, you know, eons. And because we were early, I mean, you know, Stephen Oremus, all those guys were in my first audition. And Stephen Oremus said to me at before my final callback, he said, it was in The Wizard of Nine, he said, if you breathe, between me, it's me. I'll stand there with the wizard. Right? He said, if you breathe between me and I'll stand there with the wizard, you will not get this role.
Wow.
Point blank. And Adina has like such specific and idiosyncratic phrasing. It's very specific to her in terms of just even the way she's her
Yeah.
acting. Like, you know, the score is all like, when they do the underscoring and they write your, you know, write the lines accordingly. So it was, we sort of had to memorize Adina,
Yeah.
you know, and then find our own sort of navigate our own way eventually. But it was very, very physically challenging, is all I can really say. Like
Yeah.
it's so strange to jump in. I think they that's losing, and it's so much faster now that I'm like, they have so much more, they can like get through the end of Defying Gravity without being like, I'm gonna run out of air, you know?
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Wow. Well, you certainly left your
So
mark
sorry, I'm just yammering on.
on the role. No, this is so great for us. We only have you for a couple more minutes, so we did want to ask you just a few questions that are our signature drama segments. We jumped right in, but we always like to ask our guests how they're doing in the form of are you well? And I just wanted to check in and see how you're doing. Are you well?
I'm living my best damn life. Are you kidding?
Oh
Supposed to be
yeah,
on Broadway this
yes.
year, Saturday Night Live 50th. I'm writing a musical. So Jatch and I wrote a Hallmark parody for like
Yes.
it's called The Cluster Fun Christmas, and we're developing that into a
So good.
musical right now, which is super fun.
That feels perfect. That's the right fit.
I'm really excited. Who doesn't want a holiday musical? Come on, love the holidays.
Oh, I
And yeah,
know.
I'm writing things I love. I'm making things I love. I'm working on this eternal character. I think we mentioned it before I came on camera. This Broadway diva who has a real rage problem, and
Not based on anyone.
no, it's not based on anyone.
Yeah.
And she's actually doing starting her apology tour. So in the effort to win her next Tony. So we for her one woman Sound of Music, where she plays every character, including Uncle Max and the Nazis. But she, anyway, so we are doing, we're doing a one-woman show of her on June 2nd at Ars Nova to say thank you and goodbye to my friend Jason Egan, who was the artistic director there forever. And yeah, just fun projects afoot.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Oh, I love it. I cannot wait to see it. I have to come. Oh my
Yeah, well,
God.
we're developing it for the web too, so
Thank
keep your
goodness.
eyes peeled.
That's great. I mean, like we were saying, like that's how it reaches everyone now.
Yeah.
And that's how things gain steam and get support and
Yeah.
gain momentum and live on. So that's really smart.
And yet, whatever, you can spend all your time in the old model of trying to make something that people find familiar, or you can just make things. I mean, this is my other thing with young performers, and I love talking to young performers because, like you said, everyone's path is different. It's not like you go to law school and you become a lawyer after you clerk. Like, everyone's path is different. Everyone's path is unique. The number one thing you can do for yourself is try to create things.
Yep,
Make it
absolutely.
up.
You have to do it for yourself,
That's how this
100%. Oh my
podcast
gosh.
got here. So, see?
Literally, oh my God. We also like to know the moment you got involved with the arts, at least like even became interested, maybe fell in love with it. We borrow a ring of keys from Fun Home. Do you feel like there was a moment, a
I love
song,
it.
a performance, anything when the bug bit ya?
It's so dumb and obvious for someone my age. I mean, I feel like it should be more original. I grew up in a very art-loving home. My parents, while judgmental, were very Broadway friendly. We would go see everything. My first show was the all-black cast of Guys and Dolls. My
Ooh.
second was Fiddler on the Roof. National, these are tours. They came through DC. Fiddler on the Roof with Zero Mostel, original Broadway. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So early love for, West Side Story played all the time. South Pacific played all the time. Carousel played all. My parents, we had the cast recording of Hair. My parents had seen it on the original cast on Broadway. But for me, it was like most women my generation who perform, it was Annie, because it was the first time that you dialed in. It was just even thinking about how I felt about it then, I get all excited. Like, it was like a straight endorphin hit. The connection, the idea. I remember we were at the Vet in Washington, and the national tour was at the Kennedy Center, and the dog handler brought in the dog playing Sandy because he wasn't, and he had a show jacket, and I was shaking. I couldn't believe, like, my proximity to the show jacket. Do
That's major, though. That's major.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
Oh,
like,
yeah.
even, and then my next door neighbor, I remember she got an Annie tote for Christmas. And I was like, she can't even sing. I was so mad. I was so mad because I was like, she doesn't even understand how great it is. Like, her
Yeah.
parents just gave her like something Annie, So, for me, that was my ring of keys.
And then to go on and play Han again one day.
And then they go, oh no, I mean, I was so, that was like the privilege of, I was so excited because it was Michael Arden. It was at the Hollywood Bowl. The cast was unbelievable. It was David Alan Greer
As Warbucks.
as Warbucks. Yeah, it was, and it was Megan Hilty and Roger Bart as
Oh my
Rooster
God.
and Lily. It was so awesome. And the LA Phil. I wish it could have gone longer, but yeah, so that was like a huge
Oh
moment.
my goodness. You've done so many amazing things. Thank you so much for just sharing your brilliant stories with us today, Anna. We'll have to do this again sometime because there's so many other things I would love to chat with you about.
Anytime.
Before we say goodbye, we like to end on a dose of drama. You mentioned you love going to the theater. It could be a recommendation, something you've seen, something you're
Yeah.
liking right now. Is there anything top of mind you feel like you want to share
Yeah.
with our listeners?
Well, I'm seeing everything, I really loved, I mean, it's since I can say it on this, it's
Oh, yeah.
theater nerd territory. I mean, that Floyd Collins
Yeah.
production is so beautiful.
Oh, we haven't seen it yet.
I mean, again, it's deep theater nerd territory. Like, you can't, I'm not going to take my Aunt Sally because they'll be confused and sad. But it's, for Lincoln Center, like, if you want a Lincoln Center experience, it delivers. It is so beautiful. Jeremy Jordan's voice is so, like, that thing I was saying about getting older, I saw Newsies way too many times because my kid was obsessed. But his voice, I mean, he's like operatic. It is like, I want to hear him sing Carousel in some of those shows.
Oh,
It,
yeah.
and the music is just spectacular. The production is very thorough. That would be the word I would use. Like, it's a very artistic experience. I loved it.
That's great.
Oh my
Yeah.
gosh. I love that recommendation. I can't wait. We love Jason Gotye, who plays Jeremy's brother in the show.
He's
And
so good.
oh, so good, so dreamy. And then Taylor Trench, who plays the reporter.
He's so good. He's
Oh, love.
great.
Yeah.
He's Skeet. Yeah. And her name,
Oh, Lizzie
Lily,
McAlpine. Oh.
Lizzie McAlpine. Lily, listen to me.
Yeah.
Lily McAllister was wonderful. Lizzie McAlpine, but she's from TikTok.
She has her song Ceilings was like super viral.
Her voice is, there are two voices I'm now officially like, I quit. Hers is amazing in that way that you're like, she could be Joni Mitchell, she could be Kelly O'Hara. Like, there's a lot that's going to happen with the voice, and I can't wait to hear it. It's beautiful. On the Broadway cruise, everybody was amazing, but Saleha Pfeiffer was on that. And
Oh.
I was literally like, I don't understand how a human can do this.
I know.
So.
Supernova. Anna, we love you so much. Thank you for your time. Thank you for talking with us about so many different moments in your career. But everyone, your job today is to go listen to the Mattress cast album.
Yeah, the
So
Mattress
listen.
soundtrack.
Yes, it is brilliant. Sensitivity should be your first listen. Thank you so much for chatting with us today. We adore you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, and everyone also has to follow you on Instagram. It's your first and last name.
Anna Gasteyer, AnnaGasteyer. Anna Gasteyer.
And they got to check out your parody of the bullhorn
Yes.
with like Beyond. So good. Oh, and while everyone's following Anna, follow us. We're at the Drama Podcast. I'm at Connor McDowell. Dylan's at Dylan McDowell. Do you want to say our closing word with us? It's drama.
Sure.
Drama.
Drama. Bye, McDowells.
We had to say goodbye to Anna for now, but she will definitely be back another time. We love her. Connor and I didn't get the chance to share our doses of drama because we obviously wanted to focus on our incredible guest. So let's do it right now.
All right.
Okay, real quick, I just want to say that I saw Sinners earlier this week. If anybody hasn't gotten the chance to see it or hasn't heard about it is the new Ryan Coogler movie. He obviously did Black Panther with Michael B. Jordan. They've teamed up again. It is so good. Connor, it's about twins. He
What?
plays both. He plays both twins. It's very Lindsay Lohan in the Parent Trap.
Wait, I feel like no one's talking about the fact that there's two
I
Michael B.
know. I
Jordans.
know. A
I
dream I've
mean, I've
often
had
had.
that. Oh, took the words right out of my mouth.
It's like probably my favorite new release movie of the year so far. So I highly recommend. Connor, what about you? Do you have a
Wow.
dose of drama?
Well, I'm just curious, really quick. I know we only have a little bit of time. I'm really curious, did he do a strong differentiation between the two characters, or
Yes.
was it kind of like, you never know who's who vibes.
It will, unlike Hallie and what are their names in Parent Trap? Hallie and
They're Annie,
Annie.
of course.
Unlike,
Hallie and
Hallie and
Annie.
Annie, they are not, one's not British, but one is more subdued and the other one's more upbeat and light. Like one's an introvert, one's an extrovert, I would say, is like they're
Okay.
very yin and yang.
Oh, so fun. Okay, I'm trying to go this weekend. I've booked and rebooked my ticket a million times based on like
Yeah, I have one more
life.
fun thing to say about it. We can always cut, but I
Oh,
just want to say it to
okay.
you. It's one of those fun movies that the bulk of the action all takes place over one day and tonight,
We
for like a
love
week.
that.
I love it. It just
Love
creates such
it.
an environment.
Yeah.
And who I believe should be the most famous woman in the world, Hailee Steinfeld, isn't it? Give me your
Well,
dose of
yes.
drama.
This is a hot off the presses dose of drama. The Outer Critics Circle nominations came out, and there was a lot of love for Drag the Musical,
Yes.
including Nick Adams and Alaska both getting nominated for Outstanding Lead Performer in an Off-Broadway Musical. And I have to say, it gagged for Nick, like truly giving a starring, leading, incredible performance in drag. But reading the name Alaska Thunderfuck under a Outer Critics Circle nomination is just hilarious to me for in
Yes.
starters. Not because I don't think Alaska should have been nominated, because the name Thunderfuck is crazy. And this is our theater world we live in. I'm just obsessed. So just want to give shout outs to them.
Yes. And Eddie Corbett and J. Elaine Marcos were given supporting
Oh
nods.
my God, I guess I didn't read that far on the list.
Yeah.
I'm
Yeah. So
gagged.
good.
But anyway, I want to get into the Outer Critics Circle nominations more fully. So I feel like we have to just release a Drama Plus episode about this. So, y'all,
Yeah.
when you're hearing this episode with Anna, there will already be a Drama Plus episode with us breaking down Outer Critics, maybe even Drama League. So,
Yeah.
and this is ahead of tomorrow's, if you're listening to this on April 30th, tomorrow's Tony nominations. So, thank
Right.
you so much for listening to this episode. We absolutely love Anna. Dylan and I were just saying before we recorded this that we're even more obsessed with her now. And
Yes.
another time, when we have more time, we want to get into what was it like doing Wicked from Chicago to Broadway, Grease Live, Three Penny, A Christmas Story Live.
I want to know about SNL because there is so much iconic stuff about SNL and the movies and career that she's had since. So yeah, check us out. Drama Plus link is below. And Connor, I'll see you next time.
Drama.
Drama.